Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. As the title of today's episode alludes to, it's going to be quick and dirty today. As I mentioned yesterday, I've got to drive across the state after the show today. I'm speaking to the Washington Trucking Association, and that's a long drive, so I got to get there in time for dinner. You guys are pervs, by the way, in the comments already on the live chat. Ooh, quick and dirty. I like it. Stop. Quick and dirty. Quick and clean. Whatever floats your boat. Coming up, we're going to talk about Amazon workers throwing a fit because they have to come back to the office. Later on, Nicole pulled this story. We're going to talk about, I know this show is called Undivided, but I'm going to launch into a highly divisive debate over picking up dog poop, okay? So bear with me because I'm very passionate about this and I feel like you guys are going to disagree with me on it. Later on, the impact of the failed Trump-Russia probe, we're going to talk about the impact that that has on our institutions and trust in our institutions. And then as we dip outside Washington State, only a matter of time before somebody called Tim Scott like an Uncle Tom. Republican Senator Tim Scott running for president, and apparently he's just not black enough because he's a Republican. But again, let's jump into Amazon workers planning to walk off the job. Here is the headline from the Washington Post. Amazon employees plan to walk off the job as tech worker tensions rise. Okay, and so I was thinking to myself, well, I wonder what this is about. Apparently it's twofold. So in part, they're going to walk off the job at the Seattle headquarters to protest layoffs, which I happen to think is a very bad idea. If they're laying people off, you might not want to be the person who walks off the job. And then they're also walking off the job in protest over having to return to the office. It's interesting because whenever I bring up this issue, it's so divisive and people are so split on whether they side with Amazon on this. I tend to think that if you don't want to work in the office because you spent time working at home during the pandemic, et cetera, then you have to find an employer who won't make you work in the office. I mean, if you're a tech worker, there's plenty of places that you can go work. And so I guess I have heard from people, including subscribers, who have said, yeah, but there's, you know, we can do these jobs from home. There's a lot of downside to going back to the office. But the bottom line to me is Amazon wants you back at the office. And if you don't want to be back at the office, then you shouldn't work there. Does that mean? Is that cruel? But having Amazon workers back at the office, a little selfishly, also helps to improve the dire state of Seattle. Now, I don't think that's Amazon's motivation per se. Maybe, I hope that that's part of it. It helps support a lot of struggling small businesses. But I just don't have the outrage that some people feel towards Amazon for making people come back to the office. Maybe they could have given a little more warning, but ultimately the only reason you didn't have to go to the office in the first place was because of a freak pandemic. So you're just going back to the way that things were. I do tend to agree, and I know Elon Musk is very like anti-remote work, and so people are mad at him for making folks come back to Tesla, but I do tend to agree that there's a little more of a, when you have people in the same place. I mean, I remember working from home doing the news during the pandemic. You know how hard it was to work as a team to put on a newscast when you're working from home? So as now a business owner, Nicole, I'm sorry, you can't work from home. I'm not going to allow you to work from home because I like to see you every day.
Well, it just works better for some jobs where you have the teamwork. And I just think it's such an entitled thing to walk off a job. Like, this employer is paying your rent, is paying for your food, and you're walking off because you're mad that they asked you to come back into the office as part of the job.
Right.
I just don't understand the mentality we have right now.
Well, and part of me thinks maybe Amazon is doing that, you know, back to work because they need to do layoffs anyway. And so that's a way to just thin the herd voluntarily without forced layoffs. And fine, if that's their prerogative. But I just go back to, you have free choice.
Yes.
You have free will.
Nobody's forcing you to work for them.
No one's making you work for Amazon. Right. And also, people who work at Amazon headquarters, they're paid quite a bit.
They're paid quite a bit. And I know there's been rumors about some of the environment that they're working in, but all the people that I know that work there have nothing but we're spoiled things to say about them. And same with like Facebook and all of the, a lot of tech things, because they competed to have Microsoft, they competed to have employees work for them. So they made it very nice to come to work.
Right.
And I don't understand the pushback, because if you don't want to, then find a company that's, you know, a startup that's working remotely because they're saving money on office space, right? But in this case, they've spent a lot of money on office space so that you can work as a team, and it's not the same when
you're working from home. And it's cool. The South Lake Union campus is cool. I mean, as long as you're not in the areas where, you know, you're getting shot or hit in the head with a baseball bat, right? But I would imagine also, because they built a ton of apartments around there to house the workforce, I imagine that a lot of people already live really close to the campus. Right. So, like, what, you're mad you have to walk, like, 30 feet to go to the office? And I think it's a little absurd.
I was talking to a tech worker this weekend that was telling me he logs in and goes to the gym. He logs in and goes to, you know, coffee. I mean, it is not as productive as being in an office with coworkers who are holding you accountable for your time.
Yeah, and it's not every single day. So feel free to chime in if you disagree with the assessment that I feel like it's a little bit, I don't want to say lazy, but you're just ignoring the fact that you have free will. Like, Amazon has to do exactly what you want them to do. Then leave. I'm sure Amazon is fine with that. Okay, moving on. You guys might know that the MLB All-Star Game is coming to Seattle, which I think is crazy to begin with, because I just, I don't know that I want Seattle to be on the world stage in that way. And I don't think Seattle is prepared to play host to anything like that. I think they're also, the FIFA World Cup, I think, is coming to Seattle in a couple years. And I'm thinking, so now not only are we going to have the nation's attention on us for the MLB All-Star Game, but we're going to have the world's attention on us for the FIFA World Cup? That sounds terrible. I just think, get the city in order before you show it to the world, right? But there was this interesting Como News article, which is actually something I didn't know, that Major League Baseball and the Mariners, they give kind of like a thank you payment to Seattle for hosting it. And it's $2 million. And so it sounds like it's going to be used to renovate and renew the Rainier Playfield near Columbia City, which is a historically black neighborhood. Fine. But there's also this conversation about, city's getting $2 million for housing this All-Star game. Maybe that money should be used to improve the actual neighborhood where the All-Star game is going to be, because it's one of the absolute worst neighborhoods in the city right now when it comes to crime and disorder and homelessness and substance abuse and tents, etc. And Chris Daniels, who's over at Como News now, did this interesting article where he talked to the deputy mayor about, hey, you know, there are problems around the stadium. Nobody's blind to that. So what are you doing and what kind of investments are you making to try to deal with that? Here's a clip.
What kind of discussions are happening right now between the mayor's office and the Mariners about cleaning up some of the other things that we see on the streets?
So we are constantly working together. This is not just for the All-Star game, but this is really part of our work to get the city back on track.
Seattle Deputy Mayor Manisha Harrell acknowledged public safety improvements are a focus in SoTo and downtown in advance of the event.
In terms of any sort of directive or plan of action to take care of some of the visible homelessness and addiction issues that we've seen in this part of town, is there anything planned right now?
We continually work to make sure that the pathway from, say, the waterfront, the Seattle hotels, to the stadium, that they feel safe for everybody who's going to be patronizing the games.
Ah, yes, let's just clean things up for tourists. And I know exactly what's going to happen. I know exactly what's going to happen in the days leading up to the All-Star game, before the nation's attention is on us. They're going to go in. They're just going to sweep out everything that's visible. That's all they're going to do. And then they're going to have a police presence that's elevated for a couple days in those areas to make sure that people visiting our city can walk to and from the market, to and from hotels safely. And then as soon as the MLB All-Star game is done, it's going to be like, okay, screw all of you. We can't dedicate that many resources to this anymore. And then it's going to be back to normal for all of us who want to visit and work and or actually live in downtown Seattle. And the reason I say that I know that that's what's going to happen is, on multiple occasions, when I was a reporter at Fox 13, there would be something going on downtown, or we'd have an interview. I remember one time with a mayor, I had an interview scheduled in Pioneer Square, whatever the little park is called down there, Occidental. And I had been down there because we were doing a story on some of the disorder and issues down there. I had been down there the day before, and it was disgusting. And I remember talking to my crew about, hey, you know, things are kind of sketchy down there, so just watch your back whenever you have all this equipment. We get down there for the interview with the mayor. clean, clean, not a homeless person in sight, no drug use going on. I swear it looked like the whole thing had been sprayed clean. I guarantee it was because we're going to be down there with cameras. And I'm sorry. And I know, look, I know we can't fix what's ailing Seattle overnight. Certainly not in time for the All-Star game. But then you shouldn't have asked for it to come to the city. We should not host something if we're not prepared to keep people safe. And if the city is not at a place where we want to show it to the rest of the world. We talked about this the other day when it comes to tourism. You know, trying to get tourists back to the city and that revenue generating again. I just don't think that you can focus on that until things are better. And a Band-Aid fix to sweep people out of the way and clean up some sidewalks leading to the stadium from hotels for a couple days just ain't going to do it. But mark my word, things are going to look really, really good in Seattle, really clean and pristine in those couple days leading up to the All-Star game and maybe for a day or two after. Okay, Nicole put this story in the rundown and it had me thinking, oh, this is going to be divisive today. So the headline is from Fox 13. Seattle has among the least considerate dog owners in the U.S., data suggests. So it says that as far as dog cities go, when it comes to which has the most complaints of dog poop in the U.S., it deems that the top five worst dog owner cities are Pittsburgh, Newark, Seattle, Cleveland, and Washington, D.C. Nicole, do you want to come in?
Of course.
So you said Seattle did, it was the worst for like amount of dog poop. If you just looked
right,
at that individually.
Right, it's number one on, it's failing to pick up the dog poop. But then when you add it to all the other, it drops us down to three. But is this really surprising? We don't pick up human feces in the city.
I didn't even think of that angle. Yeah, we got human feces everywhere, mm-hmm. So why would people... I will admit, if I lived in Seattle and my dog took a poop on the sidewalk and there was human feces like 5 feet away, I'd be like, do I have to clean that up? Wouldn't you be mad if you got...
I would walk my dog around that. Way.
Oh, yeah.
Like, cross the
my
street.
My dog would try to eat it. That's the problem. Wouldn't you be mad if you got, like, a $15 ticket for failing to clean up your dog poop and, like, there was human poop nearby? But this
wrong.
Got me thinking about what I think is going to be a very divisive topic.
I know.
When I go for a walk with my dogs or a hike with my dogs.
Oh, no.
And they do their business.
Mm-hmm.
I happen to think it's okay to, Nicole's like, to bag it up, right?
Oh, okay.
And then set it to the side of the trail.
It. No, you got my fish.
Until I come back. I happen to think if I'm going on a mile-long hike and my dog wants to relieve itself 10 steps in, I'm not packing that poop bag for a mile. I'm going to leave it there, and I am going to get it on the way back.
Okay, if you're going to get it on the way back, well, why don't you just hide it behind a tree or something? Don't make other people look at it.
Well, the thing is, like, she was trying to think less of me. Like, 9 times out of 10, when I come back, the bag is gone.
Because other people...
Somebody has picked it up, and I'm sure they were outraged, like, who would do this?
Oh, but I'm positive they're outraged.
There is no way I'm not going to pick it up on the way back.
Okay.
I put it somewhere very, like, where I know, like, hey, I put this here. I don't want to carry it around for a mile.
That's fair. I understand that.
So does
but
that
again,
make me...
Maybe hide it so somebody else doesn't have to look at it and trash your... way of thinking there. They're thinking you're going to leave it there for everybody. I mean, nobody wants to look at that.
So does that make me an inconsiderate dog owner?
Well, yeah, maybe. A
this
little
is
bit.
Quite the divisive topic.
I guess a little bit. You are a little inconsiderate because you're only thinking of yourself there.
Yeah, I don't want to pick up. I don't want to pack around the poop.
I know. And I don't like when people tie it to the dogs. I've seen that.
People tie it to their dogs?
Yes.
Like their collar?
Yeah. Or like they put those backpack things on them and they're like the little harness things and then
they make
just
them just carry around
there.
Their own poop?
Gross.
I don't know. I don't have a particular issue with that. As long as it's not like, you know, you're tying it to their collar, it's just swinging in their face.
Well, that's
true. Okay. Enough poo talk, but I'm curious if you guys think that makes me inconsiderate. Am I a bad
Slightly.
Human being? Okay, coming up next, there was this interesting article in USA Today, actually a subscriber alerted me to it, that really takes an honest makes an honest assessment of the impact on our institutions that some of these failed Trump, quote-unquote, witch hunts have had and are going to have, and how the media might be able to wind things back a little bit, maybe. But first, are you in the market to sell your home? If so, why would you not sell it with our friend Wes Jones at Wes Jones & Associates? He talked to me a little bit about what they can do that a traditional real estate agent might not be able to do for you.
We have programs in place to help you prep your home. We can help cover your repairs and even cosmetic upgrades, where you can pay for those at the, you know, at the closing table. We have a flexible commission structure. We have the absolute best marketing that you're going to find of any real estate agent. And there is a lot of programs and different things that we do that I go pretty in depth with on my website. So you can start by going to sellwithwest.com and go to the sell a house feature, and you can got to go under some of the different programs, you know, that we have to learn a little bit more. If you want to check out your home's value, just plug in your, you know, your address there. And if you want to book a consultation with me, just give me a, you know, just give me a call. My cell phone is there on the website, and you know, it's super low pressure. You know, I'm going to tell you the truth if this makes sense, you know, or it doesn't for you, and I'm going to treat you fairly.
Yeah, and one of the big things that you're going to get from Wes Jones is an honest assessment of the market and sort of not only the value of your home, but what he thinks that you're going to be able to get for it in this market that has just been all over the place lately. So if you want to sell your home for the highest price with the fewest possible contingencies, visit sellwithwest.com, sellwithwest.com, a better way to sell your home. Okay, let us get to our segment, Unbelievable. Thank you to subscriber Andy, who tweeted this article out, and I hadn't seen it. It's actually from a couple days ago, but it was something we were discussing on the show about, I'm not a Trump fan, you know that, but I do understand and I realize that there have been a lot of efforts to get that man in any possible way that have really undermined our institutions like the FBI and the DOJ. And there was the Durham report, and that's why we ended up talking about it. The special counsel report that came out and said the Trump-Russia collusion probe never should have happened. The FBI never should have launched it. They relied on a lot of information that was opposition research from political enemies, and it never should have happened. And not even the FBI doesn't even disagree with the findings of the Durham report, by the way. The FBI basically says, yeah, we were aware of a lot of this, and we have since worked to improve you know, our intel gathering behind the scenes and how these investigations are conducted to stop it from happening again. But there was this article from Ingrid Jacquees, I don't know, in the USA Today. And I thought it was just very self-aware and spot on when it comes to the fact that public trust, at least for half the country, is gone. We need institutions like the FBI and the DOJ to have credibility because they do some really important investigations. And one of the things that she talks about is the fact that there needs to be, and one of the ways you can start to rebuild trust is by treating the Biden family in the same way that you treated Trump, with the same level of scrutiny. So the headline from USA Today, Trump was right, Russian collusion was a hoax. Good luck regaining the public's trust. She writes, the willingness to report negative rumors about Trump is in direct contrast to how the news media have protected President Joe Biden and his family. She goes on to reference the Hunter Biden laptop story being broke and then just completely ignored and treated like it was misinformation. And then she talks about the current investigations that Republicans are leading in Congress and about how you have all these members of the Biden family who demonstrably, like it's been proven that they're getting payments from foreign countries. And the question is, okay, why? And in exchange for what? You know, entities in China and Romania. And so she says that really the media needs to show that it is willing to take those cases very, very seriously as a way to sort of mea culpa from Trump. Ingrid writes, at least the allegations deserve further scrutiny related to what's happening with Biden's family. Imagine if these were members of the Trump family. The coverage would look vastly different, I'm sure. The American people aren't blind to these blatant discrepancies whether from the FBI or the media, and once trust is broken, it's very hard to rebuild. And I find it really fascinating that even after, and frankly, pretty unbelievable, even given sort of my criticism of the press, that even after the revelations about the Hunter Biden laptop story, even after so much of the mainstream media chalked it up to just a conspiracy theory, and then they were completely proven wrong, Twitter embarrassed itself by not only scrubbing that story, making sure that you couldn't share links to it, you couldn't even send someone a private message about it. So even after the embarrassment of that, the media is still, with kid gloves, handling the questions about what's happening with the Biden family and these payments from overseas. And you would think if there was a true interest there to rebuild trust and to say, okay, we didn't pay attention to the Hunter Biden thing. It turned out to be true. We paid a lot of attention to the Trump thing. It turned out to be a total hoax. Now we really need to get back. That should have been a total wake-up call. Get back to treating all these instances the same and investigating them with the vigor that it deserves. And frankly, if it were Trump's family or Biden's family that had these connections overseas, the press needs to do its job by investigating them thoroughly and taking them seriously. And they're just not. It is shocking to me. It's unbelievable to me after the embarrassment of the Trump-Russia probe and the Hunter Biden laptop story. So a good article, again, it's from a few days ago in the USA Today, but titled Trump Was Right, Russian Collusion Was a Hoax, Good Luck Regaining Public's Trust. That is going to be an absolutely uphill battle. Okay, coming up next, The View has some choice words for Senator Tim Scott. The stupidity of those words will not surprise you. And MSNBC, an expert guest, fear-mongering over this NAACP travel advisory in Florida. But first, I heard that some of you have taken the First Mark Challenge, which I think is awesome. I've been talking about First Mark Insurance on the show for about a month now. Mike and I took the First Mark Challenge. You can go to firstmarkinsurance.com, by the way, if you'd like to just click on the link to take the challenge. And it was really a cool process and an eye-opening process. Doesn't cost you anything, just costs you a little bit of time. And they'll go over everything you have, your current insurance, your needs. They'll talk through all of that with you. And then they'll come back a few days later and they'll present you with what they think you need as far as insurance goes and how that matches up to what you already have. And Mike and I ended up getting much, much better insurance for about the same price. So it was a no-brainer. We became a member of the First Mark family. And the CEO of First Mark, Dave Taylor, says, look, even if you walk away and you just have the insurance that you started with, it's still a win-win.
We believe and we say that we will help 100% of the people that we work with, okay? Now, that doesn't mean necessarily that 100% of the people we work with are going to become First Mark clients, but we believe that we will actually help 100% of the people, whether that be stay with your current carrier, but let's modify your coverage a bit so you're better protected, or ultimately, hopefully, come over to First Mark. We're going to put you with a different company and give you better coverage, right? So the challenge is really challenging individuals to give us an opportunity to prove that to them. That's really what the First Mark Challenge is.
Yeah, and there's nothing to lose. And again, if you spend a little bit of time with First Mark virtually going over your insurance and your needs, and then you come away and they tell you, hey, you actually have pretty good insurance at a pretty good price, so we don't recommend switching any of it, then what did you lose? You found out that you're doing great and you have great insurance. And so take the First Mark Challenge, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. Also worth noting that it is a veteran-owned company, which I particularly like. Okay, let's dip outside of Washington State for just a moment. We're cruising right through. Quick and dirty today. We'll probably do about a 30, 35-minute show today with the truncated version. Just heads up, FYI. We talked yesterday about how Senator Tim Scott launched his presidential campaign. And I think he has some important things to say about, you know, the direction of his party and how the party really needs to work more on trying to convince people who are outside the base that their ideas around the economy and public safety are the best ideas for the country. So I actually thought his words were really great. But of course, The View didn't. I know, I had that whole debate about should I even play clips from The View? And here I am. I'm just a sucker for clips from The View. Whoopi Goldberg, and I knew, like, whenever a black Republican runs, immediately the left attacks them as like not black enough, not really black, an Uncle Tom. And it's just so sick and sad to see. Here's this clip from The View of what they had to say about Senator Scott running.
I think one of the issues that Tim Scott has is that he seems to think because I made it everyone can make it, ignoring again the fact that he is the exception and not the rule. And until he is then he can stop talking about systemic racism.
He's got Clarence Thomas syndrome.
But I do think that he has championed policies specific to help the Black and Brown community. The First Step Act, which many, I know a lot of liberals think it didn't go far enough, but it helped in the first year get 3,000 inmates released into rehabilitation programs.
Those are all great.
He was the champion of the Emmett Till Anti-Lynching Act, which I think was able.
It was one of them. Yeah, he was. Listen, I don't take it. Look, he's done some good stuff, okay. But if you're running for president, you got to do more than that.
Yeah.
You have to represent us as a nation and then say, and as a Black man, this is also how I feel. But you can't pretend that it's not there and that it's not an issue for the people you're running, for the party you're running for. They are, in part, the problem. This cat down in Florida, I mean, Black people know there's a problem in Florida.
Yep.
This is what I just wanted to say.
Mickey Mouse knows there's a problem.
Everybody knows.
There's a problem.
You know.
We are all dumber having heard that. That's insane. I mean, you have like, you know, Whoopi just said basically that he just doesn't hate, he doesn't like Black people, even though he's Black. And then the other woman on the panel says, hey, no, he's paid attention to these issues. He, you know, helped lead the Emmett Till Lynching Act, helped get people out of incarceration. And Whoopi's like, oh, what? So what? He's done all that stuff. It doesn't matter. He needs to do more. Yeah, he's running for president. That's what he's attempting to do. It's absolutely ridiculous. There is no Black Republican who she would be willing to accept or compliment. But speaking of Florida, we talked on the show yesterday about how the NAACP issued a travel advisory to Florida. Okay. Talking about how it's just like not a safe place for Black people and LGBTQ people. And there was this cringe. I actually had to tell Nicole, she played the clip for me earlier and I was like, are you sure that that's not satire? I thought it was like a guest trolling MSNBC until I kept listening. So there was a Democratic activist, Aisha Mills, who goes on MSNBC and is asked about this travel advisory. Here's what she had to say.
I think it was extremely clever and I really appreciate the NAACP's guidance on this issue. You know, I just took my family to spring break in Florida recently, and I think about all of the folks who traveled there for sun and joy and peace and restoration. And to be reminded that actually this is getting to the point where Florida is about to be a terrorist state to many of us here in America. Certainly as a lesbian, as a Black woman, I don't want to have anything to do with the place. And I think about all the other people who don't want to travel there either. And so I think it was very clever on behalf of the NAACP. I thank them for issuing this broad guidance. And, you know, really what it does is it turns a remarkable, I think, lens on the United States and highlights how bigotry and bias and ignorance do as much harm as we accuse other countries of doing to people that they suppress.
What? So here she's just talking about how, oh, I just went to Florida. Oh, but it's turning into a terrorist state. Oh, people go to Florida to enjoy sun and rest and restoration and relaxation. Oh, nobody wants to travel to Florida. I hear that from people all the time. That was insane. That's on the national news. And we wonder why we're so divided. Can you see, Nicole, why I felt like she was just trolling them? I had listen to the whole clip. Because it sounded that dumb.
She says clever. It was clever of them.
Clever.
So you're not saying that's good. That's keeping people safer. You're saying it's clever because this is going to get people to think the way that we want them to think. And really, I mean, they're complaining about a couple of decisions he made in school. The Don't Say Gay Bill, right? Which is just a ridiculous title that people gave him. But it's
Act, yeah.
Parental rights, right? But and then another thing where he won't let them be a specific African-American history class. But it's not like he's trying to take the history out. It was one specific class that he didn't approve of, and he just thought it went too far or whatever. But it was too agenda-driven. So there is nothing unsafe. People are not being hurt when they go there. And why wouldn't you want to go there and share your story and enjoy the sun and say, hey, what, you know, make a difference? I don't know. But what do you... No.
I mean,
terrorist
she basically
state?
She basically gave a commercial.
To terrorists?
She basically gave a commercial for Florida talking about, oh, sun restoration, but right. It's a terrorist state right. too. And then also, whenever
it's
you
cool
hear,
enough to take my kids.
I have to laugh at like these, you know, activists who talk about fascists and stuff and, you know, police state. Yeah. And I'm like, and she just had referenced, you know, we condemn all this other stuff happening around the world and look what's happening in the U.S. I would challenge you
to go
live in communist mm-hmm. China.
Right.
Okay. And see how that goes for you.
Right. Maybe take a little history lesson yourself on the rest of the world, because that is not how those terrorist states or communism, that's not how it works. Not no. like Florida.
Like, go live in South Central America and you tell right. me about, like, go travel through Mexico and tell me about a police state. Mm-hmm. I remember when I was in Mexico City, and I was walking with an open beer. I was with my friend Johnny. Have I talked about this?
Is that legal?
I didn't know. There was like open air, like bars everywhere.
Sure.
So anyway, these two cops come up to us, and they point. They didn't really speak English, but their point, I knew what they were trying to say. It's like, you can't have this. Oh, I'm like, oh, sorry, I'll throw it away. And they're like, no, we have to take you to the embassy, da, da, da. And I knew, like, okay. I said, how much do you want? I was like, how much do you want? I like pulled out money and gave it to him, and that was it. That's a police state.
Yep. That actually happened to a friend of mine as well. We were all walking down. He was acting intoxicated. He fell, and they threw him in the back of the car.
Yeah.
Oh, and
yeah.
we had to get in a taxi, follow the police van, and eventually they had said, how much money do you have? And he yeah. handed them whatever cash he had, and they
exactly.
let him out.
That's a police state.
That's
not Florida.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We'll get to your comments coming up in just a moment. But first, I've been talking about the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic Plan. And I've heard from so many of you who have tried the program and you've lost, 10%, 15% of your body weight and are just feeling great. I've lost more than 35 pounds on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic Plan. I started in November and I lost most of that by January, so in just 2 months. So if you're thinking, man, I've been hearing these ads for a while, I really want to get in shape before summer, you still have time. 2 months will put you into July, and you'll be looking and feeling better by then. So the best thing to do is just schedule a free 15-minute consultation online at eastsideweightlossclinic.com. That's eastsideweightlossclinic.com. You can do the whole thing virtually, no prepackaged meals that you have to buy and then commit to for the rest of your life. That's ridiculous. It just teaches you really how to eat better. And for me, it was a big wake-up call about how much I had been eating during the pandemic. Not good, everyone. Not good. Okay, let's get to some of your comments. Wow, you guys were lighting me up on the live feed about my my leaving dog poo on the side of the trail in a bag. In a bag. I put this poll up saying, is it okay to leave a bag of dog poop along the trail if you plan to pick it up later? 74% said no. I knew it was going to be divisive.
I'm surprised you got a few percent saying yes.
Like, I'm just honest with you guys. That's what I do, okay? And I'm not going to stop. I'm going to continue to do
that. Have I not convinced you to at least hide it behind a tree or something?
Okay, maybe I'll hide it somewhere.
Okay.
If there's a tree available. All right. Facebook, Debbie writes, this is about in response to the Seattle City Council and my assertion that no incumbents up for election. We talked about this on the show yesterday, but I wanted to read a few comments on it. About my assertion that no incumbents should be allowed to keep their jobs of the seven of nine seats that are up for grabs. Debbie said, I agree with you. None of the Seattle City Council should be allowed to keep their jobs. What has happened to the city under their care is disgusting. Where is the accountability? If these people don't show improvement, why are they voted for again? Wouldn't we be fired if we showed no improvement for our jobs? I just don't get it. And I'm actually going to talk about that subject in Sanity Check to close the show. I've got this question a lot, and so I just wanted to answer it. Becky asks, are you going to do a series of interviews or Zoom with all the candidates for governor? Just wondering what their perspectives are, and I trust you to ask the hard questions. Invariably, first, thank you. The deep sigh was not for you, Becky. But invariably, when a campaign season starts, there's a bunch of people entering the race. I'll do one interview, and then people will be like, why aren't you interviewing so-and-so? And it's like, okay, just did the first interview. And so a lot of people were like, why aren't you interviewing? Why won't you interview Semi Byrd, who's a Republican candidate for governor? We're going to. In fact, he's coming in next week.
Right.
We're going to tape with him. But I talked to you guys on the show maybe a couple weeks ago about how I won't just interview any candidate. Like, I need to see, especially if there's someone who's new to the political arena, or do they have a capacity to raise money? Are they actually out actively campaigning? You have to be a serious candidate before I'm going to have you on for a serious conversation. And so just, yes, we're going to get to at least the gubernatorial candidates who are showing that they're actively out campaigning, that they're getting some traction on their own, and then we'll have them in. So absolutely. Rebecca asks, hi, Brandy. I listened to your interview with State Senator Joe Wynn, which we had on Sundays with subscribers. He asserts that 5599 doesn't allow for surgery. This is not correct because a companion bill just signed into law defines gender-affirming care to include surgery. I get this one a lot, too, and that's why we put it in here to respond to. So I actually had that concern early on about 5599 because I read it and I thought, wow, that sure sounds like they're going to let these kids get gender surgery. And actually, Joe Wynn introduced something called the Brandy Cruz Amendment to clarify that it doesn't change state law under what kids can consent to without their parents. So there is another state law that regulates what kind of medical care kids can get without parental consent. So it actually is not true that 5599 allows kids to get surgery without the consent of their parents. They still do need consent from their parents about that. Okay, on the dog poop front, Lieutenant Dan says, sorry, Brandy, but yes, it is irresponsible to just drop your dog poop bag on the trail. Bob says, Brandy, we have a Great Dane, and we carry his poop. It's part of the gig. Oh, I bet those are...
That's huge.
Vicky agrees with me. Yes, I think it's okay on a hike, but hide it, like Nicole says. Daniel says, see, we're not all politics on this show, you know? Daniel says, thanks for sharing your controversial take. Though, with all due respect, I think you're wrong, and it is irresponsible to just bag and drop your dog poo on the street. I wouldn't do it on the street. Only on a hiking trail, with the promise of picking it up. While you may be responsible enough to come back to pick it up on your way back, not everyone is, and more often than not, people forget, and seeing that gives some people the okay to do the same, causing more waste and frustration for others. Okay, I get that. It would be better to have a separate storage bag, like a used grocery bag, to carry any bag dog waste to carry with you till you can dispose of it properly. Who knew we were going to get into this today?
Just tell Lucky to hold it.
Yeah, Lucky can just pack it around. Lisa says, what if a kid or other dog wants to play with the bag while you're gone? Yeah, that's true. Okay, good comments today. Again, we're trying to truncate the show, so I'm going to get to our closing sanity check. So I'm going to discuss this in my remarks tonight to the Washington Trucking Association, and it's also in reference to something I talked about on the show yesterday. You know, Nicole and I and a bunch of Undivided subscribers, we went out and we picked up trash in a green belt in Queen Anne. And the point I made on the show yesterday is, look, that's great. I think it's good for people to get together, to volunteer, to take pride in their communities. But that homeless camp, abandoned homeless camp we picked up, never should have been there in the first place. It never should have been allowed to fester to the point where it took 100 people 2 hours to clean it up. And the same is true for the other volunteer activities that people did across Seattle on the city's one day of service, like painting over graffiti and beautifying downtown. You know, our city has been allowed to get into such a state of disrepair. And I include that to mean homeless encampments and graffiti and vandalism and broken windows, that it takes thousands of people on a Saturday to help come in and make a difference. And even if, you know, I look at Andrew Lewis downtown, who's the councilman for downtown Seattle, who for some reason, the business community seems to be getting behind him, like saying that he's learned his lesson over the police defunding debacle. And to me, if you do not hold someone like Andrew Lewis accountable, and the only way to do that is at the ballot, right, is on their ballot, then there will be no, and there can be no improvement. We cannot expect to see the city or the state improve in all these places that it's failing unless those in power know that there is the potential for accountability at the other end. And right now, my fear is in Seattle government, in state government, you have this one-party rule where incumbents truly feel that they can get away with anything and keep their jobs. And that is not a place that we want to be. And that is not where we should expect our government of the people, by the people, for the people to be. You can't have a government for the people if you have people in power who believe that they can get away with doing or not doing anything and still keep their jobs. So accountability is absolutely critical for the people who have been in power, that have led to some of these deepening crises. Accountability is critical if we want to see improvement. All right, that's it for today's shortened version of Undivided. Thank you again. We still wanted to do the show, but I've got to hit the road to Walla Walla. It's quite a long drive. We will be back tomorrow, however, with a full-length normal episode. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. If you are not a subscriber to the show already, it's really easy to become one. Just go to undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com, and you can find out how to watch clips from the show, how to listen to the podcast, how to contact Nicole and I, or how to support the show for as little as $5 a month. I'll see you guys back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.